Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, whenever you're listening. This is Davisville on KDRT-LP 95.7 FM in Davis, California. You can find us online at kdrt.org/Davisville. I'm Bill Buchanan. Thank you for tuning in. The turn of the year is a natural time to step outside the usual stream of events, and that's what we'll do today. For today's program, I've asked three previous guests of Davisville to offer an observation about Davis as we move ahead into 2026. Something they like about the town, or would change, or think is misunderstood or overlooked about Davis. Their choice could be serious, light, or anything in between. You will hear now from Tim Keller, a UC Davis graduate who started Inventopia, a business incubator in Davis. He appeared on Davisville in 2021, when he said he thought Davis should grow by tens of thousands of people over the next few decades. Next, you will hear from Sonora Slater, now a graduate of UC Davis, who spoke with us in August 2023 when she was starting her year as editor of the campus newspaper, the California Aggie. And we'll end with Andy Jones, a former poet laureate of Davis, an academic technologist, a UC Davis lecturer in writing and other subjects, who first appeared on Davisville more than 15 years ago. I interviewed each separately by Zoom. The result presents an audio snapshot with ideas about Davis from three people who have seen the town from different perspectives: entrepreneur, recent student, and an instructor and leader in academic tech. I hope it offers some homegrown food for thought. All right, well, Tim, thank you for talking with us again today on Davisville.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Before we get to what I'm calling your Davis snapshot, audio snapshot answer, I wanted to catch up just a little bit from our last conversation. This was in June 2021, and at the time you were on the program for a couple of reasons. One is you were part of a new pro-growth group, Sustainable Growth YOLO, and your subject basically was you wanted Davis to seriously consider adding a lot more houses and population to the tune of another 50 or 60,000 people over a few decades and planned, and in fact, you wanted it denser housing, not sprawling out. Your point was that growth and economic power created by UC Davis basically requires it. Is that group still around, and is that still your thinking?
The thinking is the same. The groups have changed. So that group was led by someone who ended up not being able to, ironically, he still works in Davis, but could not find a place for him and his spouse and his young child to live here. So he lives in Sacramento and commutes here every day. That was a guy named Don. So, you know, he himself was a casualty of that. And he was the kind of the leader of the group. The other thing is that we've realized that one of the things that really is limiting Davis is that our law called Measure J has an insidious effect, which is that it prevents any real planning. We have a reactive planning process. And so I've started a different group with a bunch of people that I've gotten to know in the community, including an affordable housing developer named David Thompson, Alex Aikmore, who is a former architect on campus, some other policy experts, and we have the Davis Planning Group. So we're actually trying to put some thought into master planning, the kind of master planning that's not happening at City Hall, because Measure J is our master planning process, which is unfortunate.
And we should explain, Measure J is basically it's a city, I don't know what the right word is, ordinance, law, whatever. Basically, if you're going to annex land of the city for purpose of residential development, then it needs to go to a vote of the people.
And for any purpose, yeah.
For any purpose, okay. I also want to ask about your business, Inventopia.
It is a business incubator. We've been going for, this is our ninth year that we've been doing this. We've helped 40 plus companies. The city council just decided to loan us some additional money so we could grow, which is great. But I just had to do my metrics because they were asking, you know, like, what's the performance been like? And so we've helped over 40 companies who have raised over $130 million. And the local impact of that money that's coming in to the city, I think, is on the order of $36 million worth of economic activity that's happening here locally in Davis. That's people eating out. That's people that, you know, consuming real estate, property taxes, and the city's actual taxable income. They figured out, Greater SAC figured this out, went up by about $200,000 because the city gave me a $100,000 loan that we paid back.
Yeah, and the idea is this is a what's called a business incubator, right? That people can have an idea. Often it will come out of research, say at UC Davis, that they think is a commercial viability. And so the idea is maybe they can grow that into a business. And Inventopia is a place where they can go and get started. It's kind of a shared workspace, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like co-working, or it's like a makerspace. It's just that the tools are a little more serious, and we have like wet lab. So we have like negative 80 freezers, we have centrifuges, we have biosafety cabinets. And in the machine shop here, our engineering space is a lot more hardcore than most makerspaces are, but it is one hell of a makerspace. So, but anyway, yeah. So we've had a bunch of companies come through, and all of them are very, by definition, they're very fragile entities. They never have a lot of money. They always have more work that they need to do than they have resources. And so, I don't do the whole, business planning, help network you with investors. I do the side where I'm trying to make things cheaper. So a lot of the resources these companies need can be shared between companies. Like nobody needs a centrifuge all the time. No one needs a pH meter all the time. And so we have basically a co-op here for science-based startups.
Okay. Yeah, and you have a place on Pena, right?
630 Peña.
Between second and fifth. All right. So let's get to your answer to the question of what's something you want to say about Davis as the year turns.
Weren't you going to ask about what would I like to change about Davis?
That works too. It's anything. It could be something you like about it, something you'd like to change about it, something you think people don't maybe understand about Davis.
Well, those are all very different things. I mean, the thing I love about Davis is our incredibly talented people that are here. We have an extremely well-educated and very interesting population here. And that's why it's an attractive thing from a business perspective. If I was wanting to say one thing I'd want to change about Davis, if anything, is this notion of it being a small college town. Davis is a major research university. It is the number one agricultural research university. It's number one in veterinary and forestry and wine and food programs. It's a major research university. And I think sometimes our identity holds us back, and that does show up in the development decisions that we were talking about earlier. When people say, "Oh, Davis is supposed to be a small college town, I don't want to grow." If you look at Davis from the lens of, how big would the city of Davis have to be in order to be a good partner to the university that we have? Yeah, that answer is 120,000 people. The University of Michigan or University of Urbana-Champaign in Illinois, those are both very similar universities in very similar regional contexts, and each of those are about 120,000 people.
So is that how you calculate that number? By looking.
I mean, there's no perfect way of doing it. We've looked at faculty ratios, at student to population ratios. The cities that are truly only college towns that don't have a major metro nearby, like we do with Sacramento, like Pullman, Washington, and Stillwater, Oklahoma, the only thing anywhere near there is the university. And so, in those contexts, Davis's population would be correct. But we know, and even this has been brought up recently in the general plan process, like 80% of the adults in Davis who are employed, their jobs are not in Davis. We are very much a bedroom community for Sacramento. And we also know that we have 17,000 people who work here that commute in every day. So we have built ourselves as a very expensive housing town that doesn't actually serve its own native economy with it, with the housing that we have here.
And so you're thinking Davis should build more developments?
Not want to open the floodgates, because the developers want to build. The reason why we're in this position is because when the developers do build, they want to build expensive homes. What we need is what we call missing middle homes. These are houses that are townhomes, they are condos, apartments, things that are actually affordable by university staff, by students, by young couples starting out. We did an analysis of the affordability of one of the local developments that's coming right now. And, if you're going to buy a home that's, over $700,000, $800,000, most people are really can't afford that until they're at least in their 40s, on average. And you're not having kids in your 40s, right? So if the argument of like, hey, we need to have more development because we need to save our schools, that's something that's very much being talked about right now. Expensive housing isn't the way to do it. There's this thing, and I think most people don't think of it this way, but I think it's very much true, which is that in the United States, culturally, we have conflated two different things. One is housing as protection from the elements, and the other is housing as an investment. The federal government has promoted 30-year mortgages, and before they weren't 30 years, they were 20-year mortgages. They created Fannie and Freddie in order to kind of insure these mortgages. They kept on doing things to prop up the ability of people to afford more and more expensive housing. And they did that because everybody's net worth is in their house. But you can't keep doing that because the people at the, beginning of their careers can't get on the ladder, right? And what's unfortunately true is that a single family home is no longer the appropriate first point on that ladder. It's going to be a townhome, it's going to be a condo, because we have been so aggressive in terms of protecting home values for existing homeowners, and that's been a political decision, kind of conducted through these various federal programs. You may have seen President Trump's recently suggested a 50-year mortgage. Right, that's a continuation of that same cycle, trying to make it so that people can afford homes without actually letting the housing market correct itself to lower prices, which would be injurious to people who are existing homeowners. So we're
Okay,
not
so
advocating for a crash in the housing market, but creating more compact, more affordable by design housing forms like townhomes. The first house I ever lived in when I got married was a townhome in Santa Rosa. They're perfectly fine. A lot of people are happy to live in that. They're also more sustainable. They consume less than half the power, et cetera.
yeah. All right. Well, we're just about the end of our segment here, but this sounds you're going to stay involved in Davis, it sounds like, and I think I get a sense of what you'd like to see happen. All
Yeah,
right.
we need to have Davis be more Davis.
Tim, thank you for talking with us today, and Happy New Year. Hope 2026 is a good year for you.
Same to you.
Our next guest is Sonora Slater. When we talked with her on Davisville in summer 2023, she was near the start of the year that she spent as editor of the California Aggie student newspaper, student news organization at the University of California at Davis. Sonora, thank you for joining us again today.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, I'm going to ask for your Davis audio snapshot answer in a minute, but first I want to catch people up a little bit about what you've been doing since then. But I wanted to ask, what have you learned? What did you learn? What do you take away from being editor of the Aggie for a year? About communications, maybe, about your fellow students, or I don't know, where to get good late night food.
I do know where to get good late night boba. So I would have to recommend Tebow. They're open till 2 a.m. and the vibes are great there. I would say just the benefit of taking creative ideas and running with them. I think it was such an incredible opportunity as the editor in chief, being able to do things like we brought back the satire issue, which was one of the most fun moments of my newspaper career so far. We did a lot of things that were interactive with readers where we got their feedback and we gave them maybe questionable love advice on Valentine's Day and all of these things. And I just think that that brought an energy back to the newsroom that I've seen continue on through the last 2 years or year and a half, I guess, in the Aggie. So, yeah.
I like the way you snuck questionable in your thought there about love advice, but it's always a risk. Love advice is
It's
always
a
a risk.
risk.
And now you're living in Midtown Sacramento. Now you graduated in 2024 with a bachelor's in managerial economics.
That's right.
And you're freelancing now for places like the Winners Express newspaper, The Dirt here in Davis. Is writing, is that going to be your career?
I'm hoping that will be my career, and it currently is. It's paying my rent. So that's been really amazing, sort of a pipe dream that is happening, and I hope will continue happening.
I will say, as someone who's written most of my life, to be a couple years out of college paying your rent with freelancing, that's no small thing. That's a good start.
Thank you.
All right. Well, anyway, so let's get to your thought about Davis that you're bringing to today's audio snapshot, something that you think is misunderstood about the town, or you like about the town, or you would change, or just some observation. What have you got?
Yeah, so speaking of the fact that I recently moved to Midtown Sacramento, I guess I've been thinking a lot about the community for people who are just past that undergraduate age. Not that everybody's the exact same age, but the typical undergraduate age. Moving past that and trying to find community in Davis can be a little bit challenging, I've found. And so that's sort of why I moved to Midtown, even though a lot of my life and my work is still in Davis. It's been interesting to see how these two communities really interact with each other, knowing a lot of the people who I participate in activities with in Davis are also living in Sacramento, and but they find a community and a town that's maybe a little bit more attuned to their interests and not just centered around university life. So that's what I've been thinking about.
Well, that is one of the drawbacks of a college town, isn't it? Particularly a small college town. It's such a big part of what Davis is that if for whatever
Absolutely.
reason you're not part of that college, and you're not now, as a you're a recent graduate, you'll always be an Aggie, but not the way you were 4 years ago. So are you finding what you were looking for over there then?
Yeah, I really am. I mean, part of it is just the walkability, which seems silly to say when you come from Davis, which is also a very, bikeable, walkable place, but my apartment was still sort of far out. I wasn't living in downtown. So living in Midtown, I walk to the library and I sit there and I do my writing. I can walk to the park. I can step straight out my door and go on a run. And just being able to explore the community on foot has been really cool. And there's also so many clubs and organizations. There's writing clubs and run clubs and things like that. It's a really vibrant community.
I will tell you, as someone who has lived in Davis a long time, I first moved to Davis right out of college. So in a way, I was right where you are now, except Davis was a new town to me. And it was kind of a truism among my friends then, and I think I'm hearing an echo of it in your comments, that Davis was a pretty good place to be a student. If you've got kids, it's a good place for that, with schools and parks and green belts and so on. It's not such an easy place to be a single young adult. Well, there is the question of rents and so on, but I mean, just that it isn't, that part of Davis isn't terribly vibrant, maybe. And I think I'm hearing that in your answer.
Yeah, I really truly love Davis. And so it is a place where I still, like I said, I'm participating in a lot of activities there. But I think it's especially interesting when you went to school there and you built a life around being a student. I think that you come in with expectations of what that life is going to continue to look like. And then it's difficult to sort of build that from scratch again without the same resources you had at the university.
Yeah. Is there anything you think Davis could do about that? About addressing
You
that?
know, I think to an extent, I recognize that it is a personal issue because I know that there are places that I could get involved in Davis. And even since moving to Sacramento, I recently auditioned for and joined the cast of Legally Blonde the Musical at Davis Musical Theater Company and discovered that a bunch of my castmates live in Sacramento. And so I'm building community in Sacramento by participating in something in Davis. And I just didn't think about that at the time. So I know that those places are out there, but I don't know. I don't think it's wrong that Davis markets itself as such a place for college students. And maybe there's things there they could do. And maybe it's also about the mindset of actively seeking out those new pathways to making friends and participating in activities.
Yeah. I appreciate your answer. And this is exactly the sort of thing I was hoping for. Just sort of insights about Davis from people who know the town, see it from different perspectives. We're getting near the end. I did want to ask, I looked on your LinkedIn site and I saw you wrote about a holiday that you and your sister created called April Christmas. Just tell us a little bit about that. We're kind of at the holiday end of the year.
Oh my gosh, I love April Christmas. So it was 2020 and we were all bored. And so my sister, who is 5 years younger than me, this was like one of the biggest bonding moments in our life. We decided to create a new holiday every month. And April Christmas was really the one that stuck around. It was the last Saturday in April. We built a Christmas tree out of Crocs and put some string lights around it. Went to the Target Dollar Tree section or dollar section and got each other really cheap gifts to exchange. And then, listen to Michael Bublé, made some hot chocolate, made some cookies. We like to watch some Phineas and Ferb Christmas, something like that. And it's just April's that point where it's just far enough away from December that you're like wishing it was Christmas. So it brings a little bit of festivity and it has lasted. We have had 5 years of April Christmas. We've had guests come over, a lot of people have participated. And it's an amazing tradition. So, if you have Crocs or another shoe that could be built into a tree, feel free to participate next April.
Well, now, Sonora, you might have started something there, particularly, of course, if you write about it like you have, you could spread the word far and wide.
Important things like April Christmas, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Sonora, for talking with us today. I imagine we're still going to see you around town. And again, people can still read what you're writing in The Dirt and elsewhere. And it sounds like in DMTC, maybe.
Yeah, Legally Blonde in January. Thanks so much for having me. It was really great to catch up a little bit.
You're quite welcome, Sonora, and I wish you all the best in 2026 and beyond.
Thank you. Same to you.
Our final guest is Andy Jones. Now, you might know him as Dr. Andy, the quiz master at the pub quiz at Sudvik Restaurant on Wednesday nights in Davis, or as an instructor at the University of California, Davis, as an academic technologist, also at UC Davis, as a poet. There's lots of ways that you might have heard of Andy Jones. He's been our guest on Davisville several times since 2008. And when we last talked with Andy in 2024, our subject was ChatGPT. Andy, welcome back to Davisville.
Thank you for having me back, Bill. It's always a pleasure.
So we are talking in mid-December, soon after the end of the fall quarter at UC Davis. What did you teach this term?
I taught a journalism class. Clearly, I should have had you as a guest lecturer, but it's an advanced writing class that meets the upper division writing requirement for UC Davis students. And although I did have one of the Aggie editors in the room, it was mostly non-journalists. And so I was teaching them how to write for an audience, how to write for people who their time is overtaxed, they're distracted, and they have many opportunities to see news stories on other topics just by swiping their phones. And so I was trying to teach my students how to grab the attention of a reader and present something substantive through strategic packaging. And as I've just finished reading their long features, most of them did a good job at that.
Yeah, well, now that sounds like a class I might want to take. I mean, if you'd had me in the class, I'm not exactly any of those things. I do a radio show, long forecast, non-commercial. Pretty much, people aren't going to tune in unless they really care about the subject. But I wanted to ask about AI because that is what we talked about last time, or
Sure.
ChatGPT. How are you using it, artificial intelligence, in your teaching? Or is the goal to kind of try to keep that out of teaching writing?
I use it on a macro level rather than on a micro level. And I walk to campus. It's about 2, 2.5 miles from my house over to Shields Library, where I taught this quarter. And sometimes I'll just look at the syllabus as I'm heading off to class, and I'll see what we're taking on that day, like the difference between a lead and a nut paragraph. And so I might just say, ChatGPT, give me five different metaphor candidates to explain the difference between a nut graph and a lead. And so it will present a variety of approaches, and clearly the majority of them would not work. I mean, as a poet, I know a bad metaphor, but one of them might touch on a way of thinking about it that I hadn't considered before. And then I might use that as the lead, if you will, as the nut graph for my own lecture, really mini lectures, because I have a great number of activities for my students in my classes. But just what will my opening lecture be? And on this occasion, might it have been informed by an otherwise not considered idea that I got from ChatGPT during my stroll to campus?
Okay, so you use it as a prompt, then. You're already kind of getting ready for your class, but you're looking for things you might have missed.
Yeah, or to keep it fresh. I mean, I've been doing this for 35 years, and I've taught many of these classes before. And you might remember, Bill, that with our learning management system, the easy button is just to take the class from the previous time you taught it, tell UC Davis Canvas to change the dates, and then you have very much of a class ready to present. The benefit for that is how much time you save. The problem is that you might end up teaching the exact same class you taught before, and I'd like to have fresh experiences. And
Yeah.
so I'm always thinking, how am I going to present this in a novel way, often a way that's connected to something that's going on in the news, or even something that's going on in my own life, or that's connected to a previous conversation I had with my students. That's why I enjoy that hour-long walk to campus, because it gives me a chance to ruminate on how I might present class topics that day.
All right. Well, let's take advantage of your rumination now, and I'll ask you what's your thought about Davis? Something you like, you've changed, you think is maybe misunderstood. For this audio snapshot we're doing, what's your thought about Davis?
One thought I have about Davis is that I think every city like Davis wants to be a destination city. And certainly we have the farmers market, the bikeability, and the university, but these are not always going to bring people to, say, downtown Davis on a particular weekday evening. Once upon a time, especially during this time of year, we could depend upon quirky retail stores to bring people to Davis. People who wanted to shop at Alphabet Moon, for instance, and all the delightful toys that could be had there. But I think that as our shopping locations have become more diversified, if I were to use that euphemism, I'd say that people still need reasons to come to a town like Davis. Often that means the restaurant. But something I delight in Davis about is our art that's downtown. For instance, we've got a hotel downtown, and there's just a tiny little courtyard right there along First Street. And for some reason, there's a 15-foot tall sculpture of a giraffe there. And so that you're walking over to the train station, and then you behold this giraffe. You might wonder, what is that giraffe doing there? Who paid for that? What's going on? And then as you go to different locations in Davis, you will see other sculptures. You'll see a mural. In front of our movie theater at 101 F Street, you see these planter boxes with these amazing art displays on them. If you want to walk up the stairs into that garage above the movie theater, you'll see murals of the history of the arts at UC Davis and in the city of Davis just when you go to park your car. This is quirky, this is interesting. It comes from the work of the Davis mural team. I know a number of the members. I know that John Natsoulis of the John Natsoulis Gallery helped to prompt a lot of this. He's also negotiated with a lot of the landowners to say, please give up this entire wall and let my mural team and me do what we want with it. And typically, the property owners have approved of the murals. On occasion, such as with the Ace Hardware incident, when the property is being prepared to be sold, the mural is just painted over so that we return to a kind of corporate blasé back alley of the original Ace Hardware. And then students who had come for maybe 10 years to get their pictures taken with a particular mural at graduation time, they have to go elsewhere. They have to go back to campus and the UC Davis sign. So I think the art, which is not to everyone's liking, and there's a great variety of it, but I think the art is a lot of fun. And it's another reason that someone might head to Davis and just walk the streets and see what you can discover, as well as shop in our retail stores and dine in our fine dining establishments.
So this is a real appreciation for public art, quirky public art. I assume you'd love to see more of it.
I would. I'd love to see more of it, and I'd love to see more of our citizens to explore it, understand the history. I teach a freshman seminar called Journaling Our Long Walk Together, and I actually, for our last class this quarter, took my students on an art walk. And although I don't have any degrees in art history, I did my best to describe what we were seeing, offer the history, offer my connection, if I had any, with the artist or the part of Davis. And it's really been one of the pleasures of teaching outdoor classes at UC Davis, is interacting with all the public art that we have on campus and in town.
Well, Andy, that's all the time we have, but I think you've made a good case for art downtown. So thank you for appearing on the show and happy 2026. I wish you all the best in the new year.
Thank you. Same to you and your listeners, Bill.
Well, that wraps up Davisville for another year and gets us started on the next one. I'm Bill Buchanan. This is Davisville on KDRT 95.7 FM, Davis, California, kdrt.org/Davisville. Thank you for listening, and I wish you all a happy new year.